from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them, southhillskia.net. Fan text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. And the fan hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. City limits. It seems like a daily occurrence when I walk back to try and get something to eat out of this vending machine.
Oh, the vending machine again?
We need a new company or something. I mean, the credit card thing on these machines never works. Both of them are right now telling me that they can't accept credit cards because
Wait, both of them.
Network error. Yes, both of them.
And they're like two very different types of vending machines.
Exactly.
It's a very modern vending machine by the fans little area.
Right.
And the other vending machine near the salespeople. It's like an older vending machine that typically always works.
But they both have the credit card thing on it. And both are saying network error, not accepting credit cards. And you know what I mean? The one, I stuck my credit card up against it, right? And all of a sudden it's spinning. And I'm like, what's going on here? And then, of course, it goes, network error.
I don't understand network error. Like, what could that possibly? What network is it trying to connect to? Why isn't it its own little box of a vending machine where it has to connect to a network?
Because it's a wireless network where they, you know, I don't know. How about put one of those cords that you can put in your computer so you have a LAN, you know,
the Ethernet cord.
An Ethernet cord. Put a stinking Ethernet cord in these things.
It probably has to do this network thing to connect to make sure that your credit card is accepted. I mean, that has to be the
exactly.
reasoning.
Exactly. I mean, it has to.
So it doesn't get declined or anything like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Of course. My point is, put an Ethernet cord in these things. They got these little antennas up the top, right?
Yeah.
They're magnetic.
There's like four antennas on there.
They're magnetically stuck to the top. So every time it says network error, when kids not really, I start moving them around like, you know, like the old days where you had a TV. You probably don't even remember TVs that had antennas.
Oh, my grandmother still has a TV
right,
with an
exactly.
antenna.
Exactly. So you know, back in the old day, you put some aluminum foil on one of the things and you got it. And hey, we're going to watch Channel 11 today. So we got to move them this way. And sometimes it was even like, we got to move them this way. And you've got to actually sit in this chair and you've got to sit here in order to, for us to do something here.
Maybe we should get him on the case.
I just don't get it. I don't get it.
A lot of the texters, again, very concerned and very interested in the coyote. Someone texts in, Bechtel 2024, bring back the forests. I find that hilarious.
Yes. Bring back the forest.
Bring back the forest. That's a great text. That's a 10 for text in the city.
I tell you, we were talking about coyotes and stuff yesterday. One of the most fascinating shows, City Limits, I ever had, right, was that it was the day after the coyote sighting that I had, right?
Yeah.
So I go on the next night, and actually I think it was like the next night, it was like a 6 o'clock show, you know, because there was no pirate game, so I was actually on at 6. And I was talking about how I saw a coyote and, of course, how I was terrified of this thing and I wanted nothing to do with it. So then a couple, you know, outdoorsman types called in to just talk about coyotes and, you know, oh, it's not going to hurt you. It's probably more afraid of you, all that stuff, right? I'm like, I don't want to find that out. Somehow, one of them got into the subject of, well, you know, I go hunting coyotes, you know, and this is what we do. It's you know, you can shoot as many of them as you want because they're, you know, whatever. Okay. So I started talking about how, you know, goofy I think it is that people run through the woods trying to shoot coyotes.
Yeah, it's dumb.
However, wait. Then somebody called me and said, well, you know, Pennsylvania is home to the largest coyote hunting contest. Or, the, you know, one of the largest, and I'm not sure where it's at, this is that. So, of course, I have to look this up. And literally for the next 2 hours, we had people calling in, talking about the coyote hunting contest. And I just pulled it up again. It's called the Mosquito Creek Sportsmen's Association Coyote Hunt. The oldest and largest of Pennsylvania's organized hunts. It's in Venango County. This particular year, the guy shot a 53-pound coyote.
53 pounds?
And I guess, here's the thing. There's big money. Like, you win like 10 grand to win this or something, right?
Oh, wow. All right. Well, I'm sorry. I wasn't familiar with your game, Coyote Hunters.
Well, what I'm saying is, like there's these things, like, you win big money, but there's also, like, people that cheat. You know, like, remember the story last year about the fisherman that stuck, like, lead balls in the fish in that fishing contest?
Yeah, somebody will always find a way around something.
But there's, like, all these, like, I pulled it up. There are all these rules. And I'm like, this is, like, far more complex than I thought. I figured just, okay, get a gun. But, like, you know, the rules are, like, I guess the coyotes have to be shot inside Pennsylvania. You know what I mean?
Well, that makes sense if it's a Pennsylvania competition.
Well, right, but
if you go across like the border to West Virginia or Ohio or something.
There's a certain like time frame between when he's shot and when you turn him in, you know, that it has to, you know what I mean? So like you can't bring in a coyote that you shot last week, which I guess some guys try and pull that kind of stuff, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, all right, I don't like hearing about killing animals. I'm not PETA here, but I like animals.
There's all these rules about this, and I'm thinking to myself, this is far more complex than I thought it would be. You know, if we didn't have coyote hunts, we would be completely overrun by coyotes. It's just like in the South. Do you ever watch Swamp People, the movie?
Yes,
right. You like
the
right?
TV show Swamp People? Very interesting.
They're what are they doing? They're hunting
alligators.
And they're killing them. But if they didn't have those. And those alligator, you know, there's a month period every year where they have, you know, you can go out and hunt alligators, right? If they didn't do that every year, the swamps and beyond would all be overrun with alligators. I mean, there's a method to it. There's a reason why it has to happen, you know? But I can't imagine. You win $10,000 for bringing in a 53-pound coyote. But 53 pounds, isn't that big for a coyote?
That's a huge coyote. I didn't think they got that big, at least. I thought they were more so like 30 pounds.
Well, the second place one was 48.6 pounds.
And I was unfamiliar with the size of coyotes then.
The third place one was 45 pounds. According to the Pennsylvania Game Commission, adult male coyotes weigh between 45 and 55 pounds. So there you have it. Mosquito Creek Hunt. There's a lot of these. But again, I'm not a hunter, but I know in this area, it's somewhat of a religion. But there are some hunts that I think, you know, are necessary. I think, honestly, in some of these places, we need to have like an organized, controlled deer hunt, because it's just getting to the point where, and what's happening is, just, you know, I don't know about you, but I see a lot of deer that look malnourished. There's just not enough food for them to eat. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can understand that.
I mean, it's just, there's just not enough places and food.
There are a ton of deer.
That's what I mean.
A ton of deer in the area.
They're everywhere. And what's funny is, so many of them are used to being around people. You know, you can walk right past them and they don't even, you know, I don't know. It seemed, I mean, again, this is anecdotal, but it seemed like 20 years ago, at least, or 25 years ago, if you walked anywhere close to a deer, they got scared and they ran. Now they just kind of look at you. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'll sit on my front porch. They'll be 5 feet away from me, and that's it. Ten feet.
Like,
all right.
No, you know, no problem.
Keep going.
You know, and you see them in places where you're like, you know, what is this, like neighborhoods, or where they're just standing outside on the street or whatever. It's just kind of interesting to me. Anyway, I digress. So what you're telling me is you won't be joining the Mosquito Creek Coyote hunt anytime soon.
Not anytime soon, no.
Like I always say, someone always says to me, "Oh, why don't you go hunting?" No. For one thing, I have no interest in sitting in a tree in freezing weather at 4 a.m. waiting for some animal to come.
You ever see the That 70s hunting episode?
No.
On That 70s show?
No.
Topher Grayson, his dad, Kurtwood Smith, well, those are who plays the characters, Red Foreman, they go hunting. And basically, it's like a glorified bonding experience, and part of it goes wrong. It's just another funny episode.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think that's the biggest thing there's some funny. Did you like That 70s show?
I did. I'm on the last season of it. I have like 10 episodes left. The last season is not as good because a couple people leave. Like, Ashton Kutcher's only there like half the season. Topher Grace is gone half the season, so you only get Kelso for, you know, just a snippet of what you had for the first 7 seasons, and you don't get Eric for the full season. He's not there for a while, so we'll see what happens. I haven't finished it yet.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, I feel like That 70s show, if I'm not, I'll tell you this much right now, so, I've met Ashton Kutcher.
Really?
I think I've shown you the photo of it, all right?
Yeah, you might have, actually.
I tailgated with him. One of my best friends in the whole world was Ashton Kutcher's personal assistant for 4 years. So, you know, I met him a couple of times. I went out to L.A. I met Wilmer, you know? But the other funny one was, what is the girl, the woman... what is the one girl on that show? I think is her name Laura Prepon, I think?
Yes.
She's a poker player, isn't she?
That would be news to me. I'm not aware of that.
I'm pretty sure she is. I'm pretty sure it was her that I actually played poker with. Yes.
You played poker with her?
Yes, at the Commerce Casino. I had no idea who she was. I walk into the Commerce Casino, which is in L.A., right? The oldest, I think it's the oldest casino in the country, the Commerce Casino. It's in L.A. And let me just tell you something. The action there is incredible, you know? I mean, it's just, so anyway, and there's a lot of famous people, obviously, sitting in there. So, I buy in, I get seated at the table. And I can notice that, you know how like you're noticing there's like a buzz around somebody?
Yeah.
You know? And she's talking and you could tell, and then people were stopping, you know, as they were walking by, just, I don't know, saying hello or whatever this. So I'm like, who the hell is this? You know what I mean? Like, and I'm looking at her, I'm like, she kind of looks familiar, but I'm not going to ask her, right? I'm not going to ask her. So she got up to leave and I asked the person sitting next to me, who the hell is this lady over here? I mean... Oh, that's Laura Prepon from That 70s
show.
So I've met 3 people from that show. How about that?
Donna Pinciotti. Who was the third?
Wilmer, Ashton, and her.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Wilmer's great on NCIS. making myself sound like I'm 50 years old watching it on Monday nights, but I do. Yeah.
NCIS, what is that? I don't even know what that is.
NCIS, the naval cop drama.
Oh, okay.
TV show on CBS.
Yes.
He's on it. He's been on it for like 8 years.
Yeah, exactly. So, and anyway, it's just going to be it's one of those days where it went off the rails a little bit there, talking about coyote hunts and that 70s show. But, you know, Ashton Kutcher is a big Iowa fan. He's from Iowa.
I don't think I knew that.
Yes. And so that's where I met him briefly with my buddy out in L.A. But in Iowa, Pitt was playing Iowa. It was the I think Todd Graham was the coach, actually. And it was also the day that the news broke that Pitt was going to the ACC. But in the midst of all this, I'm at the stadium and I get a text from my buddy. Hey, are you at this game? I said, yeah, I'm here. I'm at the press box. He says, come out. Come out to the, tailgate. So I came out here. Ashton Kutcher and his family had a big tailgate with an RV and all. So it was good. At any rate, we digress. But it was a fun time. He was a good dude. So let's move forward. We're talking about the Pirates earlier, and we're going to revisit that. Last night they had an opportunity, obviously to sweep the Astros, and really it was a game that you kind of feel like they let get away. And I think the question going forward, and it's a very fair question if you ask me, is shortstop O'Neill Cruz's best position moving forward? That's the biggest question that we have with the Pirates right now. I think that, they've got to figure out something. Either he's got to get better at handling the ball, or I don't know. I know they tried to put him in right field. That probably isn't going to work. He clearly is probably not going to be a good center fielder. I just don't know what else you can do with him. I mean, it's almost like shortstop has to be his position. The one thing that's a little radical that I would do, but I know that he wouldn't go for it. He is 6'6". Put him at first base next year.
What Noah was saying, though, is don't you want that athleticism in the outfield or somewhere else on the field where he can make plays compared to at first base where you're basically just boxing him in to that position? Yeah. I think Henry Davis should be the first baseman next year.
I mean, I don't disagree with that, but my point is if you're athletic and make errors, who cares?
Well, he's made 20, which leads the league at shortstop.
That's what I'm saying. If you're athletic and you get the balls and make errors, I mean, I don't necessarily know that that's a good thing. The problem is I don't think he would be willing. Don't think he'd be willing to move to first base. And probably he would not be willing to move to the outfield. And it's easy for people to say, oh, well, it's up to the coaches to tell him this is where you're going and you'll like it.
Well, it seems like there's already been the idea and potentially even something in the works previously, not saying it's now, about him playing in the outfield by everything that Noah said. Right. But they gave it a run. He wasn't very optimistic it could work. Didn't seem like the Pirates were very optimistic that it was a potential solution. And that's as simple as that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I just feel like it's one of those things where it is important to note that he doesn't want to do it. And if he doesn't want to do it, you can force him to do it all you want. His heart's not in it. He's not going to be good at it.
And he's not going to give good enough effort probably for it.
And unfortunately, I mean, his bat is too important to what you're doing.
Oh, yeah, he's your second-best hitter.
You got to have him in your lineup. I mean, I suppose you could DH him, but again, I think one of the things about being a DH is you have to be willing to not be engaged in fielding. And I don't know. I think it's a special talent. It takes a special talent to do that. To be able to DH is not easy. Yeah. To sit there the entire game and get up four times and try and swing the bat and not be engaged in fielding, I mean, you have to have the right mentality. And again,
I think you have to have the right mentality. I don't know if it's as difficult as maybe we're making it out to be.
I think it is if you don't have the right mentality. That's the point. If he wants to be in the field, you know, you're never going to be at your best if you're not 100% happy with what you're doing. You're never. And so, you know, maybe not 100%, but 98%.
Good to be focused.
If he's DHing and he's of the mindset that he should be in the field, I don't believe that he's going to be at his best. Period. That's the way I think. And I think that's why they got to continue to be patient, for lack of a better word. Is that a good word? Patient with him being your shortstop every day?
You're going to have to take the good with the bad. The fact that he can hit 470-foot home runs.
Right.
With the fact that there might be a game like this that comes up where he commits two, three errors. And he practically did cost them the game yesterday.
Right.
Like, I don't think you could sugarcoat it any other way. The amount of runs that came in, the first error he committed on the ball to first that he threw sidearm that he just sailed, where Connor Joe basically had no play, runner moved up to second, eventually gets to third on a ground ball, and then you score on a wild pitch.
Right.
That should have never happened. And then the ball in left field, I mean, that's clearly Brian Reynolds' ball. Now, did Brian Reynolds call him off? I mean, Brian Reynolds might have even been surprised that O'Neill Cruz was all the way out that far. Because Cruz can cover a lot of ground, but that's easily Reynolds' ball.
Well, it looked
run
like
scores, double, another run scores. You're talking about a one-run game. The home run is what wins it.
But it could have been where it looked to me like they almost collided.
Yeah, well, they did.
So maybe Brian Reynolds didn't even realize he was coming out that far.
And that's a start where Jake Woodford is starting, and he gives up no earned runs over five innings, and you can't win the game?
Yeah.
Again, great thing that we're talking about this in the way that we are, because it means that the Pirates are in it, they're competitive, and there are good reasons to be frustrated and concerned.
Right.
That's just another one that's completely slipped away.
I think that's the key to me, is that, you know, you had a game where you really gave up four hits. And the shame of it is, obviously, Colin Holderman has been taking on a little bit of water recently. I mean, for a while, he was like the most, he might have been their best reliever for a while. But in recent weeks, he started to struggle a little bit.
He's got an ERA of 5 this month.
Yeah.
And it hasn't been good. He hasn't been great inheriting stranded runners.
No.
Stranding inherited runners. And just being able to get out of jams. There's been a lot of hard contact off Colin Holderman.
Right. Right.
Which is a little bit surprising.
And wouldn't you know it, isn't it kind of funny? Jake Woodford was actually pretty good.
Well, that's my point.
I mean, he was actually pretty good.
Jake Woodford was good, and you can't find a way to get that guy a win and be able to, I mean, four runs off Framber Valdez. He is a stud. To be able to get that, and I know it was all in one inning, and it seems like the Pirates is a one big inning each game, and that's kind of it, and they don't score any other innings. To be able to put up a four spot, a crooked number against that guy, with Jake Woodford shoving the way that he did?
I mean, he pitched really, really well.
That's what's the most frustrating
part. You get to a point now where you're like, okay, if he gives you that, then you gotta make sure that you go out and give him an opportunity to win the game, which he didn't.
Yeah, if you said Jake Woodford would go 5 innings, not allow an earned run, and the Pirates would be up 4-0, or the Pirates would be up 4-1, whatever, when he leaves the game, right. I would feel pretty good. I'd feel pretty good.
There's no question. I mean, there's no question about it. And so, let's see. I'm trying to see what happened here. Oh, I see. Okay. I was like, I don't remember Jalen Beeks giving up a run, but he's credited with an earned run.
Well, yeah, because the one run that came across was stranded, and then Holderman came around.
Well, he had a single.
Right.
He gave up a single, and then Holderman came in and gives up a home run. I don't know about you. I get it from the standpoint of scoring-wise, but I think it's tough to give – Jalen Beeks an earned run when the guy after him gives up the home run. By the same token, the guy wouldn't have been on base if he would have got him out. I don't know. It's a weird one for me. Right?
Well, it just comes down to what happened, what preceded that.
Yeah.
With the errors that were made. And, okay, you make one error, Cruz, lock in. cannot have that ball in the left field. I mean, what Joe Block said it best. What is he doing?
Right, right.
Like, and especially because you see Reynolds at that point. Just
yeah. Well, that's one of those things where you kind of feel like they were meant to lose. Right?
Well, yeah, when you see plays like that, that's what typically happens. The Pirates had as many errors as the Astros had hits.
Yeah.
When a team scores more runs than they have hits, you know there's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing. It's one of those situations where you would think this is a game the Pirates win, but, you know, it wasn't meant to be. But that's okay. They got today off, and then they start a big, big series, you know, in Arizona. Then they've got a big, big series. I mean, I'm sorry, against Arizona. Then they got a big, big series against San Diego. I mean, it doesn't get any easier.
No, you take two out of three from both teams, though, and you're talking about prime position.
Yeah.
If you sweep one of those series, which I don't think is likely, but if you do, you are in a playoff spot at that point by the end of the San Diego series.
Absolutely. So we'll see what it looks like, and we'll try and continue to follow everything that's going on.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Horse rep pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Going on. Well, I turn around, and on the screen behind me is Olympic golf, as well as the 3-on-3 women's basketball.
Why is our 3-on-3 women's basketball team not crushing every other country?
Because it's a different game, really. And actually, believe it or not, City Limits, this 3-on-3 is relatively new here in the United States.
Yeah, but I mean, you're telling me that a lot of people don't play 3-on-3 basketball?
We should, but my point is, have you ever played it this way? It's a completely different game with a clock and a shot clock and all that.
I haven't played
rules.
It with a shot clock.
It's different. The men's team lost too, didn't they?
The men's 3-on-3 team.
Yeah. Jimmer Fredette and that group, I think they lost. Oh, here we go. Why is the USA so bad? Here's CBS Sports just for you. Just for you, City Limits.
Okay.
Why is Team USA so bad at 3-on-3 basketball? U.S. fans should manage their expectations. United States off to a poor start. Doesn't mean the journey to the podium's over, but it's important to point out U.S. fans should perhaps manage their expectations when it comes to 3-on-3, at least for now. The U.S. is considered the most dominant country in the world when it comes to talent in the NBA and WNBA, but the Olympics are totally different. The 3-on-3 game is very fast-paced, uses only half court, lasts a maximum of 10 minutes, and only includes baskets that count for one or two. So, in addition, there are stipulations as to who can play for each 3-on-3 roster.
What are the stipulations?
Players accrue points by playing in more sanctioned 3-on-3 events over the course of the year. And those who have not participated are not allowed to be placed on a team.
So you can't throw NBA guys
exactly.
on this team.
No. That's the problem.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense
which
now.
Which is why, you know...
why nobody you recognize other than Jimmer Fredette is on the men's team.
Yeah, which is why we've got Haley Van Lith. You know who she is, the girl from
LSU. She's going to, TCU this year.
There's a couple of... But these guys have played... You know, they've played enough of these three-on-three events this year that they can qualify. So that's part of it. We can't just send, you know what I mean? So
just can't send Caitlin Clark over there. Or Cameron Brink was supposed to play for this team before she got hurt.
Right. That's the point.
Why can't Caitlin Clark play for the 3-on-3 team? Why couldn't they have found a way to do that?
Because she didn't play enough 3-on-3 events to qualify. Again, you have to play X amount of 3-on-3 events in sanctioned events, not just going out in your driveway playing 3-on-3. In sanctioned events, you have to play enough of them that you can qualify. The rule is basically to make this tournament American-proof.
Yeah, basically.
Because we can't just basically say, okay, who are the three best NBA guys that aren't on the Olympic team?
Especially with all the space that they have.
Right.
You'd be talking about like Jaylen Brown.
Right, exactly.
Who else? Klay Thompson out there with a big.
That's what I mean. You all of a sudden you put together three or four guys, you know. But here's the thing that they're saying, and this is what I like, because they did this. Okay, so in 1988, it became clear that our best college basketball players were not going to be able to compete in the Olympics against the pros from all around the world. We weren't going to win gold medals every year if we just sent our best college players for a couple of reasons. One, that was about the time when college players were starting to leave early.
Yeah.
So, you know.
They weren't seniors that were well-developed in college basketball.
Right. And they also knew coming very shortly after that was going to be a flood of guys just not even playing college basketball. So they knew that in order to continue to winning gold, we had to change the rules. So it became pros now can compete. So that's when the Dream Team of 92, right? Then 98, it was, yeah, 96, it was basically another group that was, you know, almost as good as the 92 team. 2000 was really good. But then 2004 came, and they put together a mishmash of, you know, knuckleheads and bad players, and, you know, they didn't have a lot of time to play together, and they didn't, you know, the international game was changing completely, and the number of international players coming to the NBA was exploding. So they had to recalibrate in 2004.
The Redeem team came up.
The Redeem team in 2008. But what they did is they said, we're going to do the same things with our group that they do in Europe, which is we're going to give, you have to give more than just a one-year commitment to be a part of the Olympic team. We're going to hire a general manager, which was Jerry Colangelo, and a head coach, Coach K, right? And they're going to take the team for 2 years, and we're going to play together and be a team so that when we get to the Olympics, we're not just a mismatch of players we threw together at the beginning of the summer. So that's how it recalibrated, and that's why we were winning again, you know, pretty thoroughly. We've won the last, you know, 2008, 2012, 16, you know, we've won all the Olympics since then. Okay, that's what's going to happen here. Reading this article, longer range planning and better selling of a 3-on-3 game to top stars means they're going to start for the next Olympic cycle. What are they going to start doing? They're going to start getting stars in the NBA and the WNBA interested in playing 3-on-3 tournaments.
And thus makes them eligible to play in the Olympic Games.
Exactly.
Well, 2021, which was the 2020 Games, was the first time that 3-on-3 basketball was in the Olympics. So this is a brand new event.
Right. That's what I mean. It is. But again, we're at a disadvantage because this is played all over the world a lot more than we play it here.
They're on their way to losing to Australia.
Yes. Yes.
USA women's basketball losing to Australia should never be a sentence. 26 seconds left. They're down by two.
Yeah.
They need a three.
For a couple of years, Australia had a really, really good women's team because the best player in the WNBA was Lauren Jackson, and she was Australian. And they had two other WNBA players on their team. Now, I don't know if they actually ever beat the United States.
I don't think a USA 3-on-3 team has won this year. It's won a game.
I don't think they have, I mean,
they're showing Kevin Durant and a couple others watching the 3-on-3. Where Australia can basically just wind down the clock. There's a 10-second shot clock. There's 20 seconds left.
Right. Why are they shooting?
Why are they shooting? Ball on the ground. They need a three.
Right.
They're going to let Haley Van Lith shoot the three, probably.
Oh, wait. In the Olympics, I'm sorry, Australia actually won a gold in the World Cup. It wasn't the Olympics. Sorry.
All right, Paul, now how does this make any sense? The USA took a two with 5 seconds left. Australia gets the ball back. They're fouled with 0.1 left instead of putting up a three to tie it.
There's no threes. It's ones and twos.
Well, two would have tied it right. As a three to make it what was a two-point differential. A tie game at 16 and send it to overtime.
Yeah, they don't. I mean,
what? Free throws are 1 point as well, and the free throws missed.
Yeah, which again, that's the other part of the game. It's different. It's the games are ones and twos and not that.
Yeah.
But here's the other thing. So you know we've established that in basketball we should dominate, but this 3-on-3 is a different animal altogether. Now, that being said. We're going to do it right, I bet you, the next Olympics.
Oh, there's no doubt. They're getting embarrassed.
Right. The next Olympics, we won't have this mismatch of players of just a bunch of people thrown in there. And you know, when Haley Van Lith is the biggest name you have on your
team. That's not good.
That ain't good. You know.
Somebody asked, what about the big three guys, former NBA players in the big three in Ice Cube's league? I think it's a good question. Why can't those guys get eligible even?
Could they play? I mean, could they play at that level?
Well, I'm talking about even to qualify now. You're talking about Jimmer Fredette. Yeah. When's the last time Jimmer Fredette's played in the NBA?
Well, I guess that's true. I mean, to me, if you think about it, if you took an NBA group and said, listen, this is the group that's going to be our 3-on-3 team, and this is the group that's going to be our 5-on-5 team, right? I don't think we would lose for quite some time.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't understand the emphasis right away, especially just how heightened basketball is in this country.
Yeah.
Why not already is 3-on-3, which seems like a pretty cool endeavor.
It's growing. I'm going to tell you, it's growing. In 2018, when my daughter was a senior in high school, she actually went out to Colorado Springs and competed in 3-on-3 with a chance to go to like the your world championships as a on the U18 team at 3-on-3.
Pretty sweet.
Well, they lost in the semifinals to a team full of Connecticut and it was like they were like Connecticut and Tennessee and one kid from like Notre Dame or something. I was like four. It was a team that won, put it this way. It was a team that won by a lot. But it was a pretty cool experience for her. She stayed at the Olympic facility for, you know, 4 or 5 days or whatever it was. It was fun. It was great for her. She had a good time. But that was just, this was in the infantile stages of what it is now. Now, you know, we're sending multiple teams out there every single year. You know, and multiple teams are competing in these world championships and everything else. And they're going, you know, like that. So... That's that. But behind me is the golf. You don't strike me as someone that really enjoys watching golf, right?
Not too much. I've gotten more and more into it every year. But not a big golf watcher.
I love golf. I love playing golf. I'll watch golf.
I need to get better at playing golf.
Can I give you my very unpopular opinion?
Yes.
Golf should not be.
Why is that?
Because the tour is international. Like all the, I mean, it's Rory McIlroy playing against, you know what I mean? Like, who's on our team?
Xander Schauffele.
And I mean, it's the same thing you watch in tournaments
so
every single week.
It's basically
the same. It's basically the same thing we watch every week. So the Olympics are supposed to be something, you know, special every 4 years. We, you know, I mean, yeah, that's what makes the Olympic, for instance, that's what makes Olympic basketball so interesting. Okay, now we have
Steph, KD, and LeBron are playing together.
They're playing together, but they're also playing against
Luka Doncic and
on one
Giannis.
Team and Giannis and all
and Wembanyama.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So to me, like, that's what makes it special. Okay, once every 4 years, we get to see something completely different.
It does, but is it teamed or all individual based?
What?
For Olympic golf.
No, I think it's individuals. Let me see. I don't even know, but I think it's individuals.
Well, I think the team can win an Olympic gold based on how well all four do.
Yeah. Well, here you
go. Isn't there like an individual gold, silver, bronze, and also team?
Here it is.
I might be wrong.
Here it is. What is the format? The Olympic golf competition will be similar to events. The competition will be an individual stroke play tournament consisting of 72 holes played. The golfer with the lowest cumulative score at the end of the four rounds will win the gold. Second and third place finishers will receive the silver and bronze medals. So you got Scottie Scheffler, Wyndham Clark, Colin Morikawa, and Xander Schauffele. So, okay. That's what I'm saying. I don't think there's a team format.
Okay.
So to me, it's like, I don't know. I think the same thing about tennis. You know, we just saw Coco Gauff play against the other lady. We just saw that like last week in the Wimbledon or something.
But she lost.
Whatever it was. You know what I mean? We just saw it. So, like, to me, I turn around and I see Rory McIlroy playing and Scottie Scheffler out there, and it's like, how is this any different than every single weekend on the PGA Tour? I mean, if you want to make the argument, well, there's a couple of LIV guys playing for some of the other teams. Okay. I might buy that. Probably not. Here's the other thing. Did you realize that Simone Biles is married to an NFL player?
Yeah, I did know that. Jonathan Owings, the guy who had the fumble recovery in the Thanksgiving game against the Lions. He was playing for the Packers. He plays for Chicago now. The Bears let him out of training camp to go to the Olympics.
Right.
Pretty cool.
Right. Does he realize, because I saw something about how he, well, when I met Simone, I didn't even know who she was, and
I thought
everybody was coming to, you know, coming around to talk to me. They were actually coming to talk to her.
I don't believe that for a second.
I don't believe that for a second. But B, does he realize that he's sort of the other guy in that relationship? Like, he's just sort of a guy.
Yeah.
In that relationship, he's sort of a guy.
He plays in the NFL. It's obviously big time. But in that type of relationship, I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Right.
Simone Biles is unquestioned the more popular figure and the more well-known person.
How many non-hardcore NFL fans could tell you who this guy is?
Not many.
Casual fans?
There's not many.
You know what I mean?
I didn't know who he was until right around that Christmas Day game.
Right. That's the whole point.
And or Thanksgiving. But yeah.
Here's my question. Who's the bigger star, Sierra or Russell Wilson?
That's a good question. Right now, if it was 5 years ago, I think I'd say Russell Wilson. Right now, I'd probably say Sierra.
Who's the bigger star, Tom Brady or Giselle?
Tom Brady.
Ooh. I don't know. Giselle's a world.
Yeah, well, Tom Brady's also venturing out into media, movies, not just sports. And, you know, he is sports and entertainment, not just sports.
He is, but I mean, Giselle is like a
huge star,
a worldwide international model.
I think Tom Brady's a worldwide international sports figure.
I don't know that he's worldwide. He's an NFL guy. If he was an NBA player, I might agree with you, but a lot of NFL guys are
yeah, but Tom Brady has his own unique brand that kind of separates himself from the NFL. He is his own brand, not just the NFL.
Her net worth is like five times his. How about let's do that?
Giselle.
Yeah. She's an international big-name superstar. Here you go. Let's settle it. We'll settle it.
All right, settle it with this. We got to go to Parado next.
Okay, we're going to go to Parado now, but go to a break, see who has more Instagram followers, Giselle or Tom Brady.
All right, we'll do it.
All right.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps and thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.